Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. Energy and medical research are just two of the many fields that are making Alberta a leader in innovation that's recognized around the world. Alberta's Minister of Science and Technology, Victor Dirksen, reflects on Alberta's strong points during the annual Science and Technology Week celebrations. And our views on gambling have undergone a remarkable transformation over the last three decades. Gambling researcher Dr. Gary Smith introduces some ways in which science can inform public policy. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. October is a time when people across Alberta celebrate Science and Technology Week, and they do it in a number of different ways. There is the Aztec Awards, and there's a giant festival of science in Grand Prairie. And for me, it's a chance to sit down once again with Victor Dirksen, Alberta's Minister of Innovation and Science. We started by talking about what makes Alberta a global player on the world stage of science and technology.
Well, I can think of a couple of areas where I think we are internationally recognized in innovation and science and technology. One, of course, obviously, is energy. When I talk about energy, I like to say that energy is a technology business. And it is, because we've had to do a lot of innovative things, a lot of technology to provide solutions for oil and gas recovery, the oil sands. It's all technology-based. So clearly, we are a global leader in that area. I think another place where we have an international reputation is in our medical research. So the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, which incidentally celebrates its 25 years this year, has really developed a very powerful international reputation in the kind of work that they do. So those are two clear areas where we are having an impact from a global perspective. And I think we want to increase our impact in some other areas, most notably in information communication technology. I think we've made some great strides with I-Corps that it is becoming known as a place of research excellence with respect to IT, and also in life sciences. Life sciences is a broad subject. It goes everywhere from agriculture to forestry to medicine. So we have to find particular areas that we want to be strong at and focus on those areas. So we've got great global competitiveness in some areas, and we're working on some others.
What are you doing then as a department and a government to support that so that in these areas we really do stand out and we're able to attract global interest?
It ranges. Obviously, in the medical research, the foundation that we set up, or the endowment fund, was instrumental in allowing a consistent flow of funding support for that research. In other areas, we believe that our approach to taxation, a very competitive taxation rate, broad-based, allows companies or businesses or industry to develop and prosper in our province. And by doing that, we think, frankly, they will find better ways to do things. And so a lot of the initiative has to come from industry in terms of development. We try to find the right levers, whether it's tax policy or other kinds of supports like the endowment funds to encourage that kind of development.
Well, you mentioned tax support, and that's certainly something that I hear about all the time, is a certain sense of frustration from people who are trying to take their good ideas, trying to take their new technology and commercialize it. And they would like to see some more support in that financial area. And one of the things that always comes up is, where are the tax incentives for our area?
Well, you have to know, this is probably the one area that I get the most advice of any other topic, and the advice is different. All right, so you have roughly it breaks down in half. You got half of the people who talk to me say, government, stay out of this. provide a low broad-based tax policy base as your way to let companies look after themselves. Then you get the other side that says companies that are just starting out need help. They need access to capital. They need help with their research dollars. So it has been a challenging area to focus on. And what we really, I mean, the vision, we all agree, is that you want to take Albertans' ideas and commercialize them for the benefit of Albertans. And so we've come up with several mechanisms. We've certainly encouraged or are working aggressively in the venture capital area, hosting the Banff Venture Forum, trying to hook up venture capital with good ideas and provide some mentorship programs. AVAC, which is Alberta Value Added Corporation, works in the agriculture space. We're currently considering how we might use that model in other industries, like in the IT or in the life sciences industry. So those are some things that we're considering to try and push forward in that. But you have to know, I mean, I get the advice that I receive on this subject is very mixed and very different. So we're trying to make sure that we're consistent in our messages and have a consistent policy that everybody knows what we do here in Alberta. But that's a very good question and one that we're well aware of.
One of the suggestions I've heard from people who are trying to encourage angel investment, yes, is that if they had the same tax incentives for, say, the information and technology sector as they do for the energy sector, then things would certainly open up in terms of getting capital to flow from private people into those areas. Is that something you're looking at?
Well, you know what, I hear that discussion quite often, and in fact, I probably had it myself. On the other hand, I mean, I talked to some venture capitalists just a couple of weeks ago as part of the Banff Venture Forum and posed the same question to them. And so, I mean, they say, well, a guy in Alberta looking to invest either in energy technology or an energy company versus investing in an IT area, he understands the energy industry a lot better than the IT industry. And right now there's probably a pretty good guaranteed rate of return on the one area and more questionable return than some of the other ones. So those are the issues as a province that are challenging. So you have to put yourself in the place of the investor as well. I mean, they have to make a return. They're putting up risk capital, so they're trying to get the best return that they can. But, you know, I mean, you got to look at Alberta as a whole. And generally, I think that we are very entrepreneurial, and we're willing to take risk. Our industries are starting to emerge. You are seeing success in both IT and the life sciences, and it does take time. Anybody who expects that you're going to see sudden transformations in a short period of time, it's not going to happen that quick.
On the life sciences front, one of the things that you've done this year is announce a Prion initiative for Alberta. What are you hoping to achieve with that?
The Prion initiative is really based not so much now at the technology and commercialization side, but primarily based on finding a science-based solution to the problem that we have with prions. And that is more of a question that really gets to the heart of animal and human health. And that's why that one is so important to us and to our province. It obviously flowed out of all of the awareness that suddenly developed around the BSE issue. We put together, through the advice again of AZRA, AZRA advises me, AZRA is the Alberta Science Research Authority, provides me advice on some of these questions. And so we set up the Alberta Prion Initiative to look at particular scientific areas that Alberta is good at and where we can play a part. Obviously, the whole discussion around prions is not based only in Alberta. It's a global issue. So we want to do our part in terms of the scientific know-how and the research to contribute to long-lasting solutions.
The Life Sciences Institute was announced a couple of years ago, and it's still sort of at the stage of getting off the ground. And I sense, too, there's a lot of competition between a number of different sectors that everybody's getting into life sciences. What's happening there? How are you going to, I guess, take charge of that competition?
Well, you're right. Everybody around the world seems to declare itself as the life sciences center of the globe, right? Because it is a competitive area, and a lot of jurisdictions are into it. I think our approach has always been to say that, yes, we need to be engaged in that field. Alberta has certain strengths, and we want to find out and pick those areas that where we can actually lead the world in terms of our approach or in terms of development in life sciences. And again, the thing is, it is a broad subject. So you can look at the area, for instance, of biolubricants, which is one, or bioproducts. Biolubricants would be one element of that. That would be an area that we would probably want to focus on. And again, you can use, this morning we had a discussion about biolubes. So you look at what's produced here in Alberta being canola. All right, there's a perfect feedstock for biolube products. So we need to put in place infrastructure, be it through test laboratories or scale-up facilities, to encourage the development of that kind of product. So life sciences is clearly on our radar screen. You'll find people who say we're not moving fast enough. But you know what? We're identifying people for the Life Sciences Institute to help guide us through and give us a direction in this area. But clearly, many initiatives are underway already and are developing.
We're in the midst of Science and Technology Week now. What's new this year?
Like every other year for the last number of years, we have a campaign just to raise the whole interest, particularly among young students in science and technology, to let them know. I mean, the theme is imagine your future, right? So you've got to engage the minds of young people to think about their future and how they can contribute to it. Because all of us, want to know that we have a purpose in this life. And I think that through students going into studies or taking a career direction that leads them into science and technology, they can make a difference in our world in our future. And we're trying to excite them to do that.
Thank you very much, Victor.
You're welcome.
That was Victor Dirksen, Alberta's Minister of Innovation and Science. For more information on what's happening around the province this week, check the activities listed on the website at scitechweek.gov.ab.ca. Over the last three decades, social perception of gambling has undergone a dramatic transformation, morphing from a sin into an amusement. And governments around the world are gaining large revenues from gambling. In Alberta, some of that money supports charities and scientific research. Dr. Gary Smith is a gambling research specialist with the Alberta Gaming Research Institute.
Well, it's a consortium of three Alberta universities, Alberta, Calgary, and Lethbridge. Our focus is to study gambling and all of its ramifications, the good, the bad, the impacts that it has on people and communities, and to learn more about it, to develop the best public policy we can around gambling and to educate Albertans about it.
How does this differ from perhaps some other institutes across the country?
Well, in terms of gambling-related ones, we focus on the subject of gambling in its entirety. Virtually all the other ones study problem gambling, which, of course, is a major facet of it, because you want to look at the downsides and make sure that when you offer gambling that there's a net benefit to society. So problem gambling is the major obstacle to that. But we focus on that, certainly, to some extent. But we look at gambling just in general, the phenomenon and what it does, both for good and bad for society.
Why is it that we're seeing this rise or interest in gambling becoming such a major focus for governments? They make a lot of money from it now, and we're seeing gambling institutes like casinos and even more horse racing being advertised. Like, why is it such an expanding phenomena?
Well, it's expanded in the last about 35 years, and it's gone fairly quickly from being a sin, from a religious perspective, to a vice. Most of it was illegal, to now a harmless amusement. And you mentioned that in your question. It's a way for the government to get money from relatively innocuous tax, at least from their point of view. The reasons governments justify gambling is to keep the money in the province, because other jurisdictions are having gambling, and so they say, well, rather than the money leaking out of the province, we should have it to keep it here. Also to prevent organized crime from running gambling, because there would always be gambling anyway. You can't prohibit it, so better that we run it than they do. Also as a way to fund worthy causes. Charities and nonprofit groups get a fair amount of money from gambling, as does the government and the gambling industry. So those are the main reasons that government has turned to gambling as a fundraiser.
You called it going from a sin to a vice to a harmless amusement. That would be a PR person's dream mm-hmm. in terms of being able to turn that perception around. How have they actually done that?
A lot of different ways, by aligning it with worthy causes, saying that, well, you may not like gambling that much, but the money is going to helpful cause. It's going to benefit your community with sports facilities. It's going to benefit the Kidney Foundation or the Heart Foundation. And these are worthwhile programs that we can't fund out of general revenue. But gambling, which is perceived by people to be indifferently, still may have a taint to it, but at least the money is going to worthwhile causes. The other way they do it is by using euphemisms to soften it. We call it gambling, but they call it gaming. It makes it, you know, sound like it's just, you know, an innocuous thing. And for a large percentage of people, it is. But, you know, a lot of people do get hurt by it, and so does society. We don't talk about problem gaming. We talk about problem gambling. But the government likes to refer to it as gaming. And they don't want to talk about losses, because the money comes from gambling. It's from people's losses. They talk about revenue and, you know, sort of softer terms. So that's one way they've softened the blow.
When it comes to advising on public policy, what kinds of things do you bring forward based on the research that your institute is doing?
Well, we know from studying gambling historically that it's always been associated with cheating, illegal activities. And that doesn't mean there isn't good gambling and that you can't regulate it properly. You can, but you have to really watch it closely and regulate it tightly. So from my point of view, knowing that historically, that you should be ultra-cautious when you introduce gambling, and the regulations should be tight. And my belief is that we haven't been cautious enough. We've introduced many new formats. Some of them are more addictive than others, particularly electronic gaming, which was outlawed until 1985, and then the Criminal Code of Canada allowed it. And that's the form of gambling that's causing the most problems right now, that most of the addicted people are electronic machine players. And we didn't exercise what they call duty of care there, and that is to study the phenomenon and the impact before we implement it and exercise the precautionary principle, which is err on the side of caution. Like, if you don't know what harms it might cause, don't introduce it till you're really sure about it. So there's duty of care, and there's responsibility by the government. You don't want to addict some of your citizens, you wouldn't think, but that's what's happened by introducing electronic gaming machines. So in terms of public policy, we think the government's moved ahead too fast with too many formats, some dangerous ones, and their vision is clouded somewhat because they get money from it, and the lion's share of their revenue comes from electronic gambling. So that's a quandary for them is, wow, we make so much money from this. Yes, it does cause harm. What do we do? But it seems like many Canadian governments have put money ahead of people in this sense, saying, well, and they'll say, well, it's only a small percentage that get hurt by this, and they're adults. They should be responsible. Like, we can't babysit them. But the problem is addicts, by definition, are not responsible. They have this overwhelming urge to gamble, and they've lost that control and the responsibility. Also, addicted gamblers supply a high percentage of the revenues. Say the 5% that are addicted supply 40% of the revenue. So you're looking at policy situations that are they're not good for society. You don't want 5% of the people giving 40% of the gambling money. You're preying on those vulnerable citizens. So we look at those kind of things and try to suggest more sensible and fair public policy.
Well, I have to ask you this. What is it about the electronic gaming that makes people more susceptible to becoming addicted?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's about four different reasons that have been isolated. One is the speed of play. You can play a game cycle in about 2 seconds, so you're constantly in action. So it's called a continuous game. So you can lose more, even though you're betting a fairly small amount, you can lose a lot of money quickly, as opposed to, say, horse racing, where there's a race every 25 minutes. There's quite a bit of downtime in between versus 2 seconds. So speed of play is one. Two is just the characteristics of the machines themselves, the way they're built. They're built and designed by experts to addict people. I mean, what they're trying to do is get people to play longer and to spend more money on them. And they're well advanced. We're behind in the arms race that way because they do that. The machines are new every year. And by that, I mean the lights, the alluring sounds and the graphics and so forth attract people. And when they're playing the games, it distracts them. And one of the things they like is they focus in on the machines, block out their other problems, and sort of get hooked on the machines and lose track of time and the amount of money they spend. And that works. So the people who get hurt by the machines, generally people that are unhappy with their life circumstances. Things aren't going well for them at work. You see a lot of middle-aged females whose home life isn't that good. Maybe they have an abusive husband or their kids are unruly or whatever. And to get away from that day-to-day routine, which is not that much fun, they stumble on machines and find that it's relaxing for them. It's a coping strategy they use to get away from their bad home life that works for a while, in that they feel more relaxed. They're a person there. People recognize them. They may win money initially. But obviously it doesn't help in the long run. That's not a good strategy in the long run because you're not really dealing with your problems. They're still there when you go home, and now you're losing money as well. So, but people use it as a source of medication. The other thing is that when people are playing the machines, they have this irrational belief that, you know, if I work at this long enough and hard enough, I can figure out a system or a strategy that'll help me win in the long run. And that idea of perseverance is good in everyday life. I mean, that's a good quality in a person, is to keep working at something, overcome the obstacles, and succeed. But if you use that same strategy with machines, it's disastrous because you're going to lose. There is no optimal playing strategy. The machines are randomly programmed. The harder you try, the more you play, the more you're going to lose. So in that case, perseverance is a negative quality to use on the machines. But people still, some still think, well, you know, there must be some way of doing this where I can win, or I'm luckier than other people and I'll win. So a combination of those factors makes them more addictive than other gambling formats.
How do you get around that?
Well, they've tried harm reduction features on the machines, that is slowing them down, taking the bill acceptors off them, because the bill acceptors, you can put in a $20 bill and it converts it into credits, make it go faster. They've tried pauses in the machines, like every hour it's going to stop for 5 minutes. Variety of measures like that that work to some degree, but so far they haven't been rigorous enough. They need to be much stronger ones, like maybe a maximum bet of $1, let's say, so you can't lose as much. Maybe a maximum bet for the day of $50. I mean, if I could only lose $50 a day and the machine shuts down, that would help. Because now some people can lose like $1,000, $2,000 in a day. But those harm reduction features also reduce revenue. So again, the government is caught in that trap where they want maximize money. And if they put on strong reduction features, they're not going to make as much money. So it is a trap. The other thing is location. VLTs are one form of electronic gambling, and they're in bars and lounges. And some people see this as being too accessible, that people stumble on them, not necessarily expecting them. A lot of women come to gambling that way. They go in for a drink or a sandwich, see the machines, hadn't played them before, play them, find them exciting, maybe win the first time, and start getting hooked on them. And within a couple of months, they've got an addiction problem. If they're only in gambling outlets, then at least you know you're going to a gambling, your casino or racetrack or whatever. At least you know you're going there to gamble. It wouldn't be as bad as having them everywhere in bars and lounges and in your face. So there's some things that could be done to reduce the hazards of gambling, and some places have voted them out. I mean, saying that we're not anti-gambling completely, but this one form is more dangerous than others. And I liken that to drugs, that society allows some drugs are legal. Whether they should be or not is questionable. I guess like tobacco, it's legal, but obviously it hurts. There's no positive way of using that. Alcohol is legal. Marijuana is kind of in a gray area. It's illegal, but a lot of people do it. But others are heroin, cocaine, so forth, are illegal, and they crack down on those. And gambling is similar. You have different formats. Some of them are benign, but some are over the edge, like electronic gambling is more dangerous. So you could look at it that way and say, well, let's eliminate these addictive forms and keep the other forms.
You're writing a couple of books right now, and one of them deals with morals. What are you calling it?
Well, right now it's called The Moral Maze of Gambling. So that's the working title. But I'm not looking at the morality of whether you should have or have not have gambling. I think gambling's here to stay, that it's legitimate activity and can be done safely by most people. I'm looking more at how it's regulated and how because money is the dominant driver of having gambling, it affects the morality and the ethics of gambling. So the way industry operates, the way government operate in having gambling, they do some things that border on being unethical or immoral. And I'd like to see more openness, transparency, accountability related to gambling. I'm not calling for prohibition, just tighter, better regulations.
Thank you very much, Gary.
My pleasure, Cheryl.
That was Dr. Gary Smith, a gambling research specialist with the Alberta Gaming Research Institute. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Gaming Research Institute, Alberta Innovation and Science, the University of Lethbridge, Calgary Technologies Inc., Alberta Research Council, Alberta Ingenuity, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the Alberta Conservation Association, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Science Alberta Foundation, Ducks Unlimited Canada, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.